You are listening to the gospel message in both Chinese and English. The co-workers of Living in Jesus Ministries edited the sermons of the Chinese preachers, and you can understand how the Oriental believers explained the Bible. May God bless your new life in the Lord.
Ask my wife, she would be the first to tell you that I don't do very well speaking in English. I remember it was about 3 years ago, I was speaking at a church in Philadelphia, and it was a mission conference, and most Chinese churches' mission conferences are Friday night, Saturday night, and then Sunday morning. And like this morning, most of them are also bilingual. And so the first night they had me speak in Chinese, Mandarin Chinese, and they translated it into English. Then the second night, Saturday night, they said, you know, Pastor Taylor, could you speak in English and we'll translate it into Chinese. And I actually thought I did a pretty good job until after the service somebody came up and they said, you know, thank you for your message. Actually, I came yesterday to hear you speak. And I've heard you speak today as well, and I have just one conclusion. English is not your mother tongue. So anyway, I sometimes struggle a great deal with speaking in English, but you'll put up with a little bit of Chinese if I have to throw it in here or there. But it's good to be here. I was led to believe that this would be more of an informal sharing, a little bit about my life and about my family, and so that's where I'm going to go, if that's okay with you. I want to begin by obviously saying that in the kingdom of heaven, there are no grandkids. There are no grandkids in the kingdom of heaven. I remember a story, I think it is a true story, of a missionary who was coming back to the United States on furlough, or what they call home assignment now. Most of the times, in mission organizations, you serve on the field for 4 years and then you come home to your home country for a year. And on the way over the Pacific, he was sitting beside an Indian. And he was quite surprised when this Indian told him that he was a born-again Christian. This missionary began to talk with this Indian brother. And he said, well, how did you become a born-again Christian? And this Indian brother said, well, my grandfather was born a Christian. My grandfather was a Christian. My father was a born Christian. That makes me a born-again Christian. Anyway, we all know that that's not the case. That probably like many of you, I too was born and raised in a Christian home and in a church environment. But as I said, in the kingdom of God, there are no grandkids. And each and every one of us has to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And we have to come to know Jesus Christ as our own personal Lord and Savior. And I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself because that's a little bit about myself, which I'd like to more or less end on. But I'd like to just share a little bit about how God's grace came into our family because it was actually about nine generations ago, and this would have been in the middle of the 1700s, when the first Taylor, and actually his name was James Taylor too. Our family lacks in creativity. We have quite a difficulty, and I'll stand up a little higher so those in the back can see me a little easier. Our family has a hard time coming up with different names besides James Taylor. But James Taylor, he was born and raised in the middle of the 1700s. And at that point in time, he was not a believer in Jesus Christ. He was not a follower of Jesus Christ. And in fact, he, together with his friends, quite enjoyed disrupting some of the then what we would call Methodist preachers of the day. Those Methodist preachers often were not invited into churches to preach because some of their message was not received very well within the church because they emphasized the importance of being born again and having a very real experience of a conversion experience. And so these Methodist preachers had no choice to actually preach in the open air. And so often they would go into markets, and they would go into parks, and they would just get a soapbox or on a wooden box, and they would stand on this wooden box, and they would preach their hearts out. Well, James Taylor and his companions disliked these Methodist preachers a great deal, and they found great joy in actually going to listen to these Methodist preachers preach, not with the intention of actually listening, but actually with the intention of disrupting them. And so often they would load up their pockets with ammunition to go listen to these Methodist preachers preach. And just as the Methodist preacher was winding it up and really getting into this message, James Taylor, together with his companions, would go into their pockets and pull out their weapons of rotten tomatoes and eggs, and they would start throwing them at the Methodist preacher to stop him from preaching. Now, maybe we should have inspected everybody's pockets before you came in today to make sure you didn't bring any rotten tomatoes or eggs. But as the story goes, one time a Methodist preacher came into town, and this was in England in a very small place called Barnsley, England. A Methodist preacher came into town, and James Taylor and his friends came to know about this Methodist preacher, and they came to know that he was going to preach in a certain place, and so they got all ready with their ammunition, and they went to hear the Methodist preacher preach in the marketplace. But an interesting thing happened that day. We don't know what that preacher preached about, but we know that in the course of his message, he made reference to a passage, a Bible verse in the Old Testament, found in the book of Joshua, chapter 24, where Joshua says this, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And we're not sure exactly what happened, but for some very, very strange reason, this verse very much seemed to grab on to James Taylor that day to such a point that even though his companions were ready to pull out their ammunition from their pocket, James Taylor could not do it that day. He did not become a Christian that day, but he went away very, very troubled, very, very perplexed, because somehow this verse sort of grabbed onto him, and somehow he just couldn't shake it free. And over the next course of 2 or 3 weeks, this verse just hounded him literally every day. He just couldn't get out of his mind. It just rattled in his mind. "As for me and my house, we will serve the..." Hey, he wasn't even a Christian. And so he was deeply troubled. Well, it just happened about 3 weeks after that it was his wedding day. And so, like any good husband-to-be, that early in the morning he got up and he said, "Hey, you know, this is an important day in my life, and I really need just to gather myself and be prepared." And so he went out into the back of where he lived. There was a grass field, and he sat down there just reflecting upon marriage and the fact that he was going to be a husband now and he had to be responsible, et cetera, et cetera. And as he sat there reflecting upon these things, suddenly this verse came back into his mind again. "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Well, we don't know what exactly happened, but it was really at that point in time that James Taylor the First opened up his heart to the Holy Spirit, and there, right there, on the morning of his wedding, James Taylor accepted Jesus Christ as his Savior. Well, he evidently was there for quite a period of time in that sort of spiritual experience that he lost all track of time. And by the time he sort of came to himself, he realized by where the sun was that the wedding time was either there already or just about there. Actually, it was already well past. But he quickly went back in the house and put on his clothes and then made a dash to the church. And as he was running, he kept on looking to see what time it was on the clock of the church. There was, on the top of the steeple, a big, huge clock. And fortunately for James Taylor, he had some very good friends, because he was actually 2 hours late for his wedding. Now, I don't know those of you who are married, and especially if you're the wife, if your husband was 2 hours late for your wedding, how would that stand for you? Probably you would not be a happy camper. Certainly you would not be pleased at all. But his friends were, in Chinese we say, 够朋友. They were really good friends, and so they actually had moved the clock back 2 hours. So as James Taylor was racing to the church, he actually thought that he was on time. Well, when he arrived, he realized that he wasn't on time. And his wife, Betty was her name, she made it known very clearly that he missed his wedding by 2 hours. Well, if that didn't upset her enough, the fact that he then informed everybody that now that he was a Christian, there would be no drinking and dancing at the wedding party, that infuriated Betty even more. And in fact, it is written down that she said, "Oh, you know, wretched, I married a Methodist. You know, how could I marry a Christian?" And so that's how they began their wedding. Or their married life together, not on a smooth ocean, but on quite the rough waves. But as they entered into that wedding and that marriage, actually really what was on the heart of James Taylor was that his wife would become a Christian. And so every day he would pray for his wife. And every day he would invite his wife, Betty, to come in and pray with him. But Betty was not interested in spiritual things. In fact, she was very antagonistic to these things. And the more James Taylor invited her, the more determined she was to have nothing to do with this religion, this faith. Well, if the story is told correctly, one day James Taylor just really couldn't control himself, and he did something that I don't recommend any husband doing today. But this is what he did. He, one day, after again inviting his wife to pray for him, and her refusing, he decided that he would pick her up. And so he picked her up and walked her and carried her up to their bedroom and plopped her down right there by the bed. And he knelt down beside her and then, with one hand holding her down, keeping her from standing up, he began to pray to God. Now, how you can do that and still pray, I don't know. Of course, I've never tried that with my wife. So be that as it may. He sat there with one hand holding his wife down and the other just praying to God and asking God to open up his heart's wife, open up Betty's heart to the Lord. And lo and behold, an amazing thing happened that day. Something that humanly is just almost impossible to explain, because no sooner had he began praying and just pouring his heart out that suddenly he heard his wife Betty cry. And that day, an amazing thing happened in Betty's life, because almost in an instant, almost with the blink of the eye, suddenly that hardened heart that Betty had against spiritual things, that rebellion that was in her heart, all of a sudden just melted away. And she began to wail. She began to sob. And she began to pray after James Taylor had prayed, just asking God to forgive her, and to accept her, and to come, that Jesus Christ would come into her heart and into her life, and would use her. And so that is really how God's grace came to our family some 9 generations ago. And that verse then became a very important verse in our family's life. In every generation, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I mentioned earlier that that's a verse that came out of Joshua chapter 24. I was sharing yesterday with the group. It's very interesting how in the book of Joshua, if you go and get a chance to read it, how Joshua begins his book with a family. And he ends his book with a family. He begins his book, the book of Joshua, if you go and read it, in chapter 2, he begins with a family, the family of Rahab. She was somebody who lived in Jericho, and you remember Joshua had sent 2 spies to Jericho to spy out Jericho, the city, and they lived in Rahab's house. And because she protected the 2 spies, they in turn promised protection for Rahab as well as her family, and because of her faith, actually her whole family was saved. Her whole family was saved. And so that's the picture that Joshua begins his book with. A family that is saved. But it's interesting that he doesn't end the book with just that picture alone, but rather he ends the book with this verse in Joshua chapter 24 that's spoken by Joshua, describing another family, Joshua's family, as a family that is also committed to serve the Lord. Committed to serve the Lord. And I think those two pictures are very important for me and for all of us, for that matter, that God has not only saved us, but He has saved us so that we might serve Him. I've often said that we are saved to serve. We're saved to serve. And so that verse came into our family, and not only was James and Betty Taylor Christians, but they soon became very, very active in the church. And in fact, James became a lay, what we would call in the Methodist tradition, or what was called in the Methodist tradition, a lay preacher. And so for several generations, even though they were not missionaries, they were lay preachers, and they were very involved in the church. Well, four generations from that first James Taylor came my great-great-grandfather, not the first missionary, but one of the early missionaries to China, and his name was James Hudson Taylor. James Taylor was his father's name, so I'm not sure, he was probably James Taylor the fourth or the fifth. And Hudson was actually his mother's maiden name. Her name was Amelia Hudson. And actually, James Taylor, or Hudson Taylor's conversion experience was also a very, very interesting conversion experience. How he came to know the Lord. He grew up just like his father, his grandfather, also in a very devoutly Christian home. But in his teenage years, he became very, very rebellious against this faith. And I remember reading about it in my own experience when I was growing up, and I very much also went through a period of rebellion against this faith and really antagonistic against the Christian faith. And for a period of 3 or 4 years, Hudson Taylor grew very, very cold to spiritual things. And this weighed tremendously on his mother and on his father's heart. And so they often prayed for their child, Hudson Taylor. And the story goes that one time Hudson Taylor's mother was away visiting some relatives for several weeks. And Hudson Taylor one day found himself not needing to go to work. He was actually working at a bank at the time, and they had a day off, and so he was at home. And of course, back in those days, they didn't have iPads, iPhones, Nanos, or anything like that. He had nothing to do. He was pretty bored. And his father was a lay preacher, and he knew that his father had a lot of books in his study and also had a lot of gospel tracts. Now, Hudson Taylor knew about these gospel tracts, because if you've ever read a gospel tract, and maybe we don't see them very often today, but back in those days, or even when I was growing up, when we had a lot of gospel tracts always had an interesting layout. They would always begin with a very, very moving story. A very heart-wrenching story. A good read. But then at the end, of course, they would always get to the part, well, if you want to experience this, you need then to accept Jesus Christ. And so there was always a sermon at the end of these gospel tracts. Well, that day Hudson Taylor was quite bored, and he didn't know what to do, but he knew that his father had a whole stack of these tracts. And he decided, well, what I'll go and do is I'll go read the front part of the tract. And when I get to the back part where it says you need to believe in Jesus, I'll toss it. And so that's what he did. Well, we don't know what tract he read. But as he read through the tract, suddenly toward the end, a phrase caught his attention. And this phrase actually was the last thing that Jesus Christ said on the cross. You remember that on the cross, Jesus said seven statements, seven phrases, and the last one was, "It is finished. It is finished." And for some reason, this phrase just grabbed onto Hudson Taylor, and he couldn't let it go. Because in that phrase, he suddenly realized that what Jesus Christ actually had accomplished on the cross was the completion of salvation. That there was nothing that Hudson Taylor needed to do to earn salvation. There was nothing that Hudson Taylor could do to earn salvation. That Jesus Christ had already died on the cross and he had completed salvation. That there was nothing that he could do, nor that he could do in order to earn this salvation. And so that day, right there in his father's study, this phrase, "It is finished," became the verse that God used to bring about Hudson Taylor's conversion story or experience. Well, it was interesting because what was happening at the same time is his mother, who was visiting, I mentioned, some relatives in a faraway place, she was actually praying for her son. She had suddenly sensed a real deep burden in her heart to pray for her son, to ask God to somehow work in her son's life. And so while she was visiting her relatives far, far away, she excused herself from downstairs and she went upstairs and she went into the bedroom where she was staying and she locked the door and she knelt down by her bed and she began to pray for her son. And she was there for several hours just praying until at the point in which she realized that God had heard her prayer and God was going to work. Actually, God was working right there and then in her son's life. And so she got up and she was still away for about a week and then she came home. Well, when she came home, obviously her son was very excited. Hudson Taylor was very excited about going and telling his mother what happened. And so he ran and met her at the door and said, "Mommy, I have an exciting piece of news to tell you." And lo and behold, his mother said to Hudson Taylor, "You don't need to tell me. I already know what happened." And Hudson Taylor said, "What? How do you know what happened? Who told you?" She said, "Nobody told me. God told me." "What did God tell you?" And Hudson Taylor's mother told Hudson Taylor what happened when she was praying. That as she prayed for her son, that God gave her a peace for her to know that her son was going to become a Christian. And you know, as they exchanged notes, lo and behold, they came to realize that just as Hudson Taylor was reading that gospel tract in his father's study that day, at that very same exact time, his mother was praying for her son in a faraway place. And that became such an encouragement to that whole family, as that whole family then became a committed family of not only saved people, but people who had a desire to serve God. Actually, Hudson Taylor, even before he was born, his parents had dedicated him to become a missionary to China. And even though he went through that period of rebellion where they didn't know what was going to happen, their heart and their desire was that their son, Hudson Taylor, would become a missionary to China. And so at the young age of 21 years old, Hudson Taylor got on a boat. It was called a Dumfries, this boat name. And he got on a boat and sailed to China. He sailed to China. And he became one of the early missionaries in China. Well, there are a lot of stories about Hudson Taylor and his experiences in China that I remember growing up reading about. For instance, remember reading about how he, when he first went to China, the first thing he realized is that he had to take off his Western clothing and put on Chinese clothing, because a lot of Chinese kept on thinking that this faith, Christianity, was a Western religion. And of course, they didn't want to believe in a Western religion. And Hudson Taylor realized that if I'm wearing Western clothing to share the gospel, people's perception will be that this is still a very Western religion. And in fact, one time he had a very interesting experience. He was preaching away one day and he noticed a Chinese man looking at the jacket that he was wearing. And he was particularly interested in the buttons that Hudson Taylor's jacket had in the back, in the small of his back. And he couldn't figure out, this Chinese man couldn't figure out what in the world these two buttons were for. And so after Hudson Taylor had got done speaking, he said, "Hey, can I ask you, Teacher Taylor, 戴老师, Teacher Taylor, can I ask you, what are these two buttons in the back of your jacket for?" And of course, Hudson Taylor had no idea. It would be the same if you were to ask me, what are these three buttons on the side of my sleeve in a suit for? I have not been able to figure that out. Somebody once told me, they said, "Well, that's pretty easy, because if you lose the button here, you have some buttons here that you can put over there." Well, if you know anything about a suit, you know that these buttons are about half the size as these other buttons in the middle. So that doesn't quite work. I remember somebody even more humorously told me, "You know what those buttons are for, Pastor Taylor? They didn't have handkerchiefs back in the early days. And so people often used their sleeves to wipe their nose. And the buttons prevented people from wiping their nose, because it's obviously rather uncomfortable to have buttons rubbing up against your nose." But I'm not really sure that quite explains it anyway. But this man was quite interested in what these buttons were about. And so he asked 戴老师, Teacher Taylor, "What are these buttons for?" And Hudson Taylor said, "I have no idea what those buttons are for." But, you know, through that experience, Hudson Taylor realized that, you know, if we're going to share the gospel with other people groups and people that are not used to a lot of the Christian terminology and a lot of what might go on in the church, we have got to find a way in what we usually call indigenize, or to make it more contextualized for the people so that it's easier for them to explain and accept. And so Hudson Taylor took off his clothing, put off his Chinese, his American or his British clothing, and he put on Chinese clothing. And in fact, he actually grew a long queue, because this was back in the Qing Dynasty, back in the 1800s. And so he had a long queue that all the Chinese men had to grow as well, being a part of the Qing Dynasty. And in fact, yesterday morning, I showed a slide. I didn't bring my slides today, unfortunately. But I showed a slide yesterday of actually a strand of Hudson Taylor's hair that has been handed down each generation. Because he spent about 6 years in China, and then he went back to England for a period of time. And before going back to England, or on his way back to England, he cut off his queue, because obviously they don't wear queues in England. And so he cut off his queue, and he had braided this queue into two watch bands, and then he gave these two watch bands to his parents as presents.
We thank you for your listening and hope you can pray for Living in Jesus Ministries. If you are willing to support us with money, please click donation on the homepage and sow the seeds of the gospel with us to glorify God.